This commendation of my principles of moral goodness brought a blush of pleasure that I could hardly suppress. As for Mr. Grummidge, he made a point of clearing his throat to indicate disapproval. "Now then," the porter asked, "where does the young lady require this?" "Never mind where," Mr. Grummidge snapped. "Along the docks here. I'll tell you when we arrive." The money pocketed, the man lumbered over to my trunk, swung it to his shoulder with astonishing ease, considering the trunk's weight and size, and said, "Lead on." Mr. Grummidge, wasting no more time, and perhaps fearful of the consequence of more talk, started off again. After guiding us through a maze of docks and quays, he came to a stop. With a half turn, he announced, "There she sits," and gestured to a ship moored to the slip before us. I had hardly looked where he pointed when I heard a thump behind. Startled, I turned and saw that the new man, the one we'd just engaged, had taken one look at the Seahawk, set down my trunk in haste, and, like the first, run off without any word of explanation at all. Mr. Grummidge barely glanced over his shoulder at the hastily departing worker. In exasperation, he said, "Miss Doyle, you will wait for me here." And with rapid strides, he took himself up the gangplank and onto the Seahawk, where he disappeared from my view. I stood my place, more than ever wanting to get aboard and meet the delightful children who would be my traveling companions. But as I waited on the dock for something like half an hour, all but unmoving in the waning light of day, I could only gaze upon the ship. To say that I was unduly alarmed when I examined the Seahawk would be nonsense. I had not the remotest superstitious notion of what was to come. Nothing of the kind. No, the Seahawk was a ship like countless others I had seen before, or for that matter have seen since. Oh, perhaps she was smaller and older than I had anticipated, but nothing else. Moored to the dock, she rode the swell easily. Her standard rigging, tarred black for protection against the salt sea, rose above me, dark ladders to an increasingly dark sky, and indeed her royal yard seemed lost in the lowering night. Her sails, tied up, that is, reefed, looked like sleeves of new-fallen snow on lofty trees. Briefly, the Seahawk was what is known as a brig, a two-masted ship, with a snowmast behind the main, perhaps some 700 tons in weight, 107 feet stern to bow, 130 feet deck to mainmast cap. She was built, perhaps, in the late 18th or early 19th century. Her hull was painted black, her bulwarks white, these being the ordinary colors. Her two masts, raked slightly back, were square-rigged. She had a bowsprit, too, one that stood out from her bow like a unicorn's horn. Indeed, the one unique aspect of this ship was a carved figurehead of a pale white seahawk beneath the bowsprit. Its wings were thrust back against the bow, its head extended forward, beak wide open, red tongue protruding as if screaming. In the shadowy light that twisted and distorted its features, I was struck by the notion that this figure looked more like an angry, avenging angel than a docile bird.